All right, you guys, welcome to this episode of the OutRun Show. Today, we are talking about how to introduce your friends to parkour. So if you have someone who wants to train parkour and they approach you, how do you get them into it? How do you not make that experience inapproachable? Or
how do you give them an authentic
experience? I think that's a good one. How do you give them an authentic intro to parkour? It's really cool out here. And we're going to talk a little about what is the Buddhist style of gaming. Do you even Zen game, bro? All that and more on this episode of the OutRun Show.
And it's freaking cold. Guys,
it's so we're going
cold out there.
I'm engaged.
Yeah. I don't know how, because it's negative.
Dude, we can just open up the garage door, you'll get engaged.
Yeah. Oh, man. I remember looking at the weather, like AccuWeather, out for like months, and then it would be like, I was like, oh, cool. Like, it's pretty much going to be 20s to 40s for the rest of the year. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, now we're at like -2. Zero. Literally zero.
We have a negative zero.
AccuWeather says -0 today.
What's the real feel?
-2.
Yeah. -2. That's not bad. Yeah, I mean, when I woke up, I think I looked at the temperature and it was like, yeah, -3, -4 or something like that early this morning.
It's a zero minus. It's not a negative
zero. Zero minus. Yeah, and so
below zero,
and I was actually excited. I love when it's like cold like this.
Really?
Yeah, because it's a freaking winter. Like, it's not like 30 degrees is like, oh my gosh, you get to go outside and do cool stuff. Like, it's still freaking cold. Uh-huh. So I still sit inside. Seriously, except now I have a legitimate reason, because it's in the negatives, right? Now I can be like, no, I'm not going out there.
The thing is like, there's such low humidity in Colorado that the heaters run, and unless you had like radiant heat and like some humidifiers going to keep it above, like, I just feel like I'm in space where there's a vacuum and there's no like moisture, and you're just like, nonstop.
It does hurt to breathe in. I always sleep with my window open, no matter how cold it gets.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Right now your window is open.
He's incredibly.
It was open last
night. Stop. The window could not have been open last night.
It was open last night.
Yeah, he does. Trust me, when we lived together, we had some discussions about that.
You're supposed to be like eco-friendly. I love this. You and my wife Candy are like this too. Like, we'll wash plastic to like recycle it, and then when it comes to like temperature or something like that, just like the bigger levers on eco-friendly behaviors. Just out, like, why don't we have two cars?
Well, it's different.
I want the door open, and I want to keep the temperature at 80 degrees. And
it's different in an apartment. Because you can almost shut your heater off in a third floor apartment, and the heat from the two
below.
I can, like, in the summer, it won't. My apartment will never drop below like 70 degrees, no matter how hard I or how many windows I leave open in the middle of the night. So, but in winter, yeah, I'll crack the window open like that, and then I'll just drop my thermostat down to 60, and I'll just see what happens.
Mm.
And
let's just see. Tonight, does a pipe bust? Or do we wake up happy?
It never gets. I always wake up and I'm like, it's too hot. It's too hot. And I'll open the window just a little bit more. So
I always remember the story of my.
It's disgusting.
I mean, my house, I have my thermostat set at 62 at night when I go to bed. But I don't open windows because I like, you know, knowing that I'm paying the right amount.
I almost guarantee it'll be different once I get a house. I don't think I can.
You know,
I can
do that.
Because there's so much heat from the person below us that I think that I'm riding there. I'm riding their ego wave.
You're their utility bill. It's their eco wave, right?
You're like heater pooling. Like carpooling, but like for heaters.
Yeah.
I bet they have to run their heater twice as much because you do the window open. Like, why is all the hot air just getting sucked out of my... It's like I have fans on or something, and they're just sucking the hot air out. It's really just you with a window open up top. I had a house, my first house had a boiler heater in it from like 19 whatever, right? Like the scary thing on Home Alone. And yeah, exactly.
So problem,
right? And and it broke when I went on vacation. I have roommates, and it broke when I went on vacation to Thailand. So I remember one December, it was like one of the coldest Decembers. And my friends were like, the heater's broken.
Your first house was in Iowa.
Yeah.
And it gets cold in Iowa.
And wet. So, like, the cold and wet is the worst.
What's Iowa's temp right now?
Not warm, I'll give you that.
Because I haven't seen the sun in, like, 3 weeks.
You?
No, Iowa.
Oh, yeah. They're not.
-2.
-2. Yeah. Plus, like, 80%
humidity.
Plus
80% humidity.
I don't know if that's better or worse. Like,
humidity. Worse. I will tell you, it's absolutely worse.
Yeah.
110% worse.
Is it better for breathing, though, the humidity, or is it just like...
Dude, it's so cold, it chills your bones. There's just that cold moisture is rough. Yeah. I think that...
And they get lots of snow there.
The only thing I don't like is, like, if I go up into the mountains or when I first come back to Colorado after traveling and the weather's like this, is it does give you that, like you just feel like you're just, like... freezer burn or something. Like, you're just, everything is just dry and cold and, like, yeah. I like if you go up in the mountains and stay at, like, you know, 8,000 feet or higher, right? You always just feel
crispy.
Crummy after spending the night. Like, you can't, like, your breathing is really hard and stuff like that.
Oh, that's enough.
I feel that
way. The only way that I hate it is when the heater, the dry air hits my face. That's my least favorite thing in the world.
Right. So you don't like riding in a car when it's really cold and someone's blasting the hot air in your face?
No, I can take it a little bit. Really? That's Jesse's thing.
I hate that.
I don't like it.
I'll ride with that. I will ride in a car with the heater on and the window down. Like, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, that feels great.
Yeah.
So I'll straight up sometimes, though, get in Justin's car. So for all of Justin's, like, cold temperature, I'll straight up get in his car and I'll be like, it's hot, dude. I'm sweating right now. And he's just like...
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Hmm.
And I'm like, I can understand the dichotomy. Like, sometimes I like to crank the heat up and then crack the window, you know, you feel the cold air, but then you got the heat like on your chest. I like that like contrast, but you know, I drive a car like once a week, so maybe less, once a month, maybe.
Do you guys, cold weather training, favorite cold weather training? We want to talk about the logic of whether it's, I mean, there are some. Right, I mean, you could...
What do you mean by cold weather training? Like cold weather parkour training?
So, like, something like I like to do is...
Dip in poo, like poo dip.
Yeah, like, oh, there's that. That's definitely a more recent... I mean, when I lived in where it was consistently cold, the idea of getting yourself colder was ridiculous. So, when I come to Colorado, it's like, they're like, oh, look at cold day. Let's jump in that frigid water. It's cute, right? Like, everybody thinks Colorado's that cold. It is pretty cold, but not like...
it's not that cold.
Like in the Midwest and like in regions like, you know, Michigan and Minnesota and like winter descends on you and then it's just a cloud of frozen. It's like living in your freezer with the lights off for months. There's no like, oh, I feel festive. It's just boom, it's depressing. And it piles and it hits you and you just, it's just like one of those depressing movies that you watch where like someone's a fighter who has to fight their way out of poverty in Detroit. Just always needs to be cold.
And they're always in a hoodie.
Right.
Always in a hoodie and they're like out in the frost.
Right.
Yeah.
Or they're
in
the frost and the hoodie. Yeah. Like in the crunch of like tires and like there's just nowhere to be.
Yeah, Colorado's really more like as we enter a season, it really is just like, hey, there's a buff on the chances that you'll get this type of weather today, right? So in the summer, there's a big buff on you might get a 90-degree day, right? But will you get a 60-degree day? There is still the chance, right? And it's just like in the winter, like there's a big buff on the RNG chances that a winter day is going to drop.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You might still get a 60-degree day.
You might. We have been getting some 60. I know, like just last week we had a couple 50 or 60-degree days.
With sunshine and everything. Like you go outside for a walk.
And because we have 300 days of sunshine, like it all gets better because even if you do have a really, you know, hot or cold day, you get some sunshine and it's not that bad. One of the things I do miss in that I felt like was something you could do in the Midwest is like for training, or it was just going out on like snowy hikes in the woods, like Wolverine or something like that, and then chopping wood. Like that was just like.
This guy loves chopping
wood. I love to chop wood.
He loves destroying organic matter. You're just like, this tree, I'm going to kill it.
I mean, he's
mowing his lawn too, right? Doesn't he love doing that?
Yeah, so that becomes like the lawn mowing thing is more like simple problems.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a problem. I know how to solve it.
That's why I made my lawn a rectangle. There's not even like corners that are weird.
But don't you do a diagonal?
I usually go around the outside in a rectangle and then I go diagonal.
So you're complicating the rectangle.
Slightly. But anyway, so like that's, I like that. And then, I do like dance when like we were dancing and it was probably like 40 or 30, yeah, 30-ish, high 30s. Yeah, last weekend.
I guess just a couple of
days. Yeah, and we had the, once we got moving, we had the garage door open. And so it's like 35-ish, maybe 40 at best. And, you know, but we have the, we're dancing and moving like right by the garage door. So I like that exchange.
I feel like it was warmer while we were dancing. And then as soon as we were like, all right, cool, session's over. Like, we're going home. The sun like disappeared and then it just like dropped. Because I remember ride home for me, which is only like a mile and a half, right? But like by the end, like my jaw was hurting from the wind chill.
It was cold.
That's the worst feeling. Yeah,
I like being like hot, like with the hoodie on and like the sweatpants, and then you know maybe even be sweating, and be this is not good for hypothermia to be like this in the wilderness or something like that. But to be sweating like that and then be surrounded by cold, but still feel hot and still train. I think that's a pretty cool feeling.
Nice. Yeah, it's like it's the. The hot air in the car with the window down.
Mm.
Yeah, it's that split.
And I'm always impressed by the body. I'm like, oh, the body can heat. This is amazing.
I think, it's nice because your body's just like, yeah, we feel the cold, but we're fine. We're safe.
And then, we're strong. And then you need 1,000 calories to make up for it in the evening.
Yep. yeah, then you gotta go, you know, eat some beef or some tempeh, I guess, if you're a vegetarian. Since it's high protein.
Main topic today is how to introduce your friends to parkour. The best way
no,
is...
Not right? quite. What would you do?
What would you do to introduce your friends to parkour? Someone's like, hey, I heard about this parkour stuff. I want to get in.
Hopefully, if they're your friend, hopefully they already know
that. I think we should start with how we already did it. Right, because I think we've all already done it, and I think that's the true. Way that
so like ourselves, how we got into it.
I think everyone who's done parkour has tried to drag someone else into it.
I mean, I came out of CrossFit, so my like I was highly aware of like that. This is the best thing ever. You should do it, sort of thing, right? Yeah. And I was maybe a little less.
Dang, he was used to the multi level marketing schemes.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, this is for me. Right, I had
not anybody else.
Well, yeah. I wanted to teach people who wanted to learn, but I definitely wasn't like trying to drag my friends and family into it because.
But yeah, I think it's open gym for sure. It's how almost everyone gets dragged into parkour. That's how we got Jordan, our best friend, into it, and was way too good at it on his first try, so. But it's like, yeah, taking them to a gymnastics gym, open gyms. And I feel like there's a good mix because obviously you can't get started straight on the skills because you're usually way ahead of everybody. But a foam pit is just so hard not to have a great time in when it's your first time in a foam pit.
Your first time. You get disenchanted.
Your first
real
time
quick.
In a foam pit is pretty fun, right? You're like, wow. Session. I mean, it's
no consequences.
Yeah.
I remember this because I did have a friend that I did bring in, and you know the conversation was, oh, you should come and train, and it was down. I mean, you know, I love this was years ago, and then he separated his shoulder in the foam pit. I did bring a friend to the open gym, and he separated his shoulder in the foam pit.
Oh man.
Yep. So that's yep.
Hard to do.
Yeah. We were trying to jump all the way across the foam pit.
Yeah.
And then just made it, kind of. Torso made it hit the shoulder.
Oh, that's like it's like the pool jump. Like people are like, I'm gonna try and jump the pool. Yeah. And I'm like, you realize there's no way that this goes well except you get it perfectly, right?
Right.
Like if you roll the dice and it's like, nah, sorry, didn't make it. It hurts. Mm-hmm. There's no like, oh my gosh, didn't make it.
Yeah.
And the foam pit's pretty similar, and it gives you this illusion of like safety that you just go for.
So I want to say something about that real quick because open gym is always on my mind. It's such this like torn part of my.
Yep.
Yeah, it's always on my mind. But there is that. There is that aspect of I want to introduce you to parkour and what I do, or let's go train parkour. And the first thing we do is go to a gym and then don't take their programs.
Yeah.
Right. Like I am definitely of the spirit that if you want to learn what I enjoy about parkour, a good place for you to start is to go maybe do some of it with me at a lower intensity and explore and look at the way the environment is differently, right? Because I always imagine, like, people like, well, I'm outside and I go into the mountains, or I go outside and I go around town, right? And I just always imagine, like, that shift, that paradigm shift of having these, like, you know, hiking boots on that are real big, and you got your backpack and your walking stick, which I didn't have a walking stick, but you know what I mean. Like, this whole, like, geared up mountain, going in the mountain, you know, like that. I took a trip to REI and spent $1,000, and now I'm going to go up the mountain when I could have just gone. Where parkour is so much simpler, where it's like, maybe we don't even need shoes. In fact, when I started training parkour, I would go to the mountains and do bare, just, I just go in like, or on the course style, shorts. Like just shorts, and that's it. Just no shirt, just go run barefoot, right? Yeah. And that was exciting to me. But so you can take your friends, and I would take a friend and take them out and try and show them, oh, this is a rock. The rock is not just to be looked at. Let's climb on the rock. Let's explore the environment. Let's create a challenge here. Or I think you could bring them in to a gym and be like, maybe we need a little more of a staggered approach to this, or the weather isn't permitting, or this is what I do and this is my project, my gym. You should come in and experience that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's almost, now I think it's almost comical to think, all right, I'm going to take you and just throw you in. Why, if you're going to a gym, you might as well enjoy what gyms have to offer, which is usually programs, not just being hucked into a foam pit, right?
Okay, so if we compare this to, because the only other sport that I know that I brought people in to and shared their first time experience with is skiing and snowboarding. And some of the worst times are when you just buy them the regular old lift ticket and you take them down. You're like, oh, blue runs are easier. Green runs are always harder. You take them on blue, and then they just have a miserable time because everybody's blowing past them. They don't know the rules of the slopes. It's like they don't know how to tighten their boots on their own. So it's like, and that kind of feels like open gym to me. It's like, let's just buy the lift ticket and we'll just teach you on the way down.
We'll teach you on the way down.
But it's always better to be in a group where everyone's their first time, and the whole intention is to, all right, let's do this safely and in a way that's enjoyable, and we're close to the lodge, so that if it's too much, we could just back out of it. So, but yeah, like this whole idea, like, all right, let's just take you to the top of the mountain and just throw you down. You'll figure it out. Like, that's what open gym feels like.
Agreed.
And it is a bit like that. And yeah, I mean, we got started with like the gymnastics gym, open gym, out of desperation, right? Like, if there were the parkour gym option, we would have been there, but there wasn't when we started. And also we weren't really doing parkour as much as we were just messing around, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we were just going in and setting up stupid challenges. And it's a great introduction for your friends on, like, here's an introduction on just movement and play.
Yeah,
it's play. Not really an authentic, genuine introduction to parkour, right? Like, it was, because half the things that we did weren't really parkour. Like, you know,
it just wasn't like hitting each other,
doing swings in and trying to land in like a donut in the foam pit. Like, that's not really parkour. That's just play, right? And that has its place, and those are enjoyable. But yeah, like, how would you introduce somebody to the same sport? And the truth is that a lot of the friends that we brought in don't actively still do parkour. Right, they had a great time, and they'll come and they'll do those goofy shenanigans with us again. But they don't actively do parkour, so it's like, if somebody was like, "Hey, I think I might want to get into parkour. Can you show me what it's about?" You know, just taking them to open gym without you there to like give them the instruction, if you were a coach, does seem a little bit like,
yeah, you have to be
inauthentic.
Your intention has to be a coach if you bring someone in for your first time. And if that's not your intention, if your intention is just to have a fun time playing, that's not open gym. That's, I mean, because you need to hand it off to a coach. You can't, if I'm using skiing analogy again, I'm just a skier and I don't know how to coach someone. It's not, I feel like there's some sort of like moral dilemma right there, where you're putting someone in risk, into a risky environment because they trusted you.
Yeah, there is a, you can be naive and be like, I mean, let's go, let's do it. And then people just get hurt.
Yeah.
Like this attitude of like, just because I can do it, you can do it. Just because I made it through, you can make it through. Mm-hmm. Like there is this whole, like, it's like the analogy might be, you know, the like natural selection of a contact sport, like martial arts or like some military application where it's like, okay, here you go, here's your weapon. We're just going to get after it. You'll figure it out. Don't worry. And then, like, yeah, some people do make it through, obviously, but the selection process takes, like, 100 down to 10.
Yeah.
And it's, and are you so sure that your friend you're bringing in is going to be like that? It's going to be that good.
Yeah, and we have, I feel like several stories where if the intention wasn't to coach like that and there wasn't a plan to, you know, ramp them up, that something happened. Like, we broke mirrors in the gymnastics gym. Injuries in the foam pit, yeah. It's without that plan, it's just chaos.
Yeah, and it is. If a friend comes to you and like, hey, will you show me, like, you know, will you introduce me to parkour? You have to be like, okay, and ask yourself, do I want to coach them, or do I want to give them to somebody who is willing to coach them, and then jump in with them, right?
Yeah,
I think that's an awesome way to do it, is be like, yeah, sure, let's do it, and then go to your local gym, or, you know, if you are the local gym, find another coach and be like, hey man, will you like just run through like a beginner's workshop, you know, with me and my friend, and jump in. And I think that's a little bit easier, because then you and your friend are also listening to somebody else who's giving the instructions, right? It can be a little awkward, especially if you taught that person. But it's easier for your friend, because sometimes, like, doing a one-on-one introduction with somebody you know is also a little awkward, you know, depending on where your, like, friendship is. Like, for example, I wouldn't do that, and I didn't do that with my wife, mm-hmm. right? Like, when she doesn't do parkour, but she's tried it out. She's, you know, she's given it a shot mm-hmm. just to check out and know, like, what it is that I do. But I always pointed her towards the adult classes.
Yeah.
And she wanted to come in, right? And then on her first couple of sessions, I jumped into the adult classes with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just did the class together,
mm-hmm.
right? I never taught her, like, parkour mm-hmm. because I feel like, one, I just don't want to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's very hard.
And I also, not that, like, she's difficult or anything like that, but it's just like
the nature of the relationship is different.
It's just different. It's tougher. I think she would have more fun with other people. Not in a one-on-one setting,
yeah.
right? Like, because she likes to be a fish in a very big pond kind of person, right? Mm-hmm. She doesn't like all the attention on her. And even in a one-on-one session, that's just how it is, right?
Yeah.
It's like me just, all right, do it 5 times. So in a group class, it's more fun. So I think if you got a friend like that, yeah, just being like, cool, let's go find a place and we'll jump into a class together. And that'll be an introduction. You know, and you can vet that program if you know. Mm-hmm. Or if it's your gym, then you just find somebody you trust.
Yeah. Have you recently done this? Because this is what's different, is like, it kind of, I think Justin's earlier thing is finding people who are kind of where you're at with stuff down the road changes. So as you become more experienced, you go deeper into a sport or a discipline or a practice, someone just hopping in, like, it's the nature of it has to be, I think, play now that I'm kind of thinking about it. I think it just has to be play, and it has to be low key, low risk play. And I agree, I don't think open gym is the best place for that, because again, in parkour gyms, the environments are catered to give highly specialized opportunities.
Yeah.
And then you have the pressures of everyone around you crushing it, and them used to, it's like learning to drive in India, in Mumbai, in a traffic jam. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
just like, get in the car, go.
There are certain rules there
learning
that
stick shift.
People are just kind of vibing and feeling, and when you just throw someone in that and they're like, oh wait, I'm not able to read these cues, and someone's swinging and someone's jumping and that person's crushing it and that person is scaring me, and it's that can be a bit intimidating. And then so I think
comparable level other students is a must for sure if you're going to do the class approach.
And then also, if you can so I think a big part of that, depending on the nature of the person, but more times than not, you're not going to want to come in and, I think we were just talking to some other coaches about this the other day, like, don't come in and, like, stomp your biggest tricks around that. Like, oftentimes we have the looser scenario with the adults because they have a little more attention, and then we'll get, like, coaches coming in and they start crushing stuff and then everyone just stops.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. So that I would jam phenomenon almost, where you could almost take a, like, you could almost draw a chart, and then for every degree more competent and higher level and more famous the athlete gets that emerges, the total number of people participation goes down.
Yeah, less productive everybody else is.
Right.
For sure.
Right. So you take really capable, famous, awesome, crushing it person, and then total participation goes down, but you remove the upper, like, 10th percentile for, or 90th percentile for athletes, and then all of a sudden group participation goes up. So when, if you are higher, like, skilled, you have to kind of play, I think, a little more. Like, if you were going to come in, Jess, and work with brand new people or younger, when you work with family and kids and stuff like that that are new to stuff, and there is an unstructured environment, you're not hitting big stuff.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of coming down to that level and being like, oh, yeah, cool, let's try. Have you guys tried this a little bit? You know, it's a little more sober like that. A little more sober. And that's why I think outdoors might be better for if you can't leverage a facility's resources very well in the environment, you might want to withdraw from all the crazy and make things more approachable by, if you're not going to pass them off to a coach, maybe you just go to a park and explore a little bit, you know. Yeah. change the perception, because I think that's one of the biggest things that has to change in parkour, is that parkour vision, is that, like, ability to sort of look at your environment differently. Like, that may be the biggest underpinning shift between,
yeah,
we went up the mountain and we went for a hike, or we went up to explore using parkour. The mindset's completely different.
Yeah, the route might be the same, but yeah, but the mindset and the goal are completely different. Yeah, I think, yeah, barring going to a facility, picking a spot outside for just the two of you or three of you or however many friends you got that are like, hey, I want to check out parkour. And then just setting up basic challenges seems to be the most, like, playful way, because there does have to be some instruction, right? It's like if I went up to an artist and I was like, hey, I want to learn, like, I want to get into painting, and you're a really good artist. Will you, you know, show me some painting? And they just, like, gave me a canvas and then some paint, and they were like, slap it on there. I'd be like, okay, I draw a sun and a horizon and I'd go, right? And I wouldn't have that much fun because I'm not learning anything, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I could have done this on my own time. Mm-hmm. So there does have to be some instruction or guiding of, like, here, check this out, try this, right? Mm-hmm. But it can't be so regimented that it takes the play out of it. Mm-hmm. Because that's what drew all of us into parkour, was the fact that we get to play in our way using these tools. So it has to, I think, like, going out and setting, like, little challenges, like, oh, let's try this jump here, and then, you know, jump to this spot, roll across this spot, you know, here, and then breaking that down for them is a really great way to introduce somebody. Obviously, those challenges are very low level.
I think, right? If you have the low-skilled person, introducing a contextually rich environment is probably going to be a better mechanism for that. Don't take them to the classic parkour spot with two walls that's all concrete, right? You know, where people can just do a vault, or there's a couple jumps in between. I think that's those city spots, in my opinion, is not where I would take someone. I think this is something where nature or a park where there's some variety and they can explore physically in a way that they haven't, like, thought of before, or reintroduce that sort of their human nature, is probably the best place to catch the bug. You know what I mean? Because the problem is it parkour, if you don't know any parkour and you can't do the big skills in environments like just two concrete walls, is pretty boring.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You're like, okay, I mean, the artist, the parkour artist, the person who's already got that built, that foundation, that mindset's like, oh, I can think of 50 things to do here. And a new person's like, we're just talking about this, is two walls. Okay, try that big jump. Okay, I broke my ankle. All right, no, I'm done. This is not cool.
So, like, I guess what,
okay, so
what are you suggesting is an alternate?
So, when I started, actually, crawling was very interesting to me. Because
nerd.
Because, one, as an adult, it's not super permissible, right? Like, getting on the ground and crawling around. Like, you're kind of, it's like, what? So it felt kind of underexplored and nice. But crawling in nature was really cool. So, like, if I could... Like, I have this video earlier on when my emphasis was more on naturals, parkour, I feel like, exploration. And I would go and find an area with, like, a stream or a creek and, like, some rock. And then I'd find a place where I could just, like, try to, like, crawl underneath a bridge and then go around, shimmy around the edge of a rock, and then go through, like, a little waterfall, and then work on, like, crawling, prone and supine on different, like, rock faces that I normally wouldn't, like, run over something like that, right? But it was, if I was just, somebody just said, okay, we're going to go in a gym. I tried to teach like this before. Like, you're just doing forwards and backwards crawling. And it's just like essentially on a wrestling mat or in like a, you know, a CrossFit gym. And it's just very boring. It's like crawl forward and crawl backwards. It just feels like boot camp, right? Like a fitness boot camp.
Yeah, I think that, I think I disagree with the nature one, but this is me personally. Like, I don't really like nature parkour. Yeah, I don't want to discourage anybody else from doing it. I think like people like Rafe Kelly, who are really big on that stuff, do really cool stuff with their workshops and their programs around like natural parkour, right? But for me, that's not it. But I'm also like, I'm a cyber future like techie nerd, right? So like going to nature is like, okay, well, didn't we spend like thousands of years trying to get out of freaking nature? Like, I'm all in harmony for nature. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like, I'll never go on a hike, but I'm not going to like drive an hour and a half out of the city to like go stomp on some trees.
Really?
Yeah. I just, the exception is like Fontainebleau in like Southern France, which I still got to take you guys there. It's literally like a giant forest with like rocks and sand. It's like a beach meets a forest. Right. So the sand is super soft. There's big rocks. It's like globally known for people going there to do like bouldering.
Really?
Right. But the trees are super lush and like strong. And they're like those viney ones that you get in the Pacific Northwest.
Uh-huh,
right.
Uh-huh.
Like that. But with the dryness of like a beach in the summer. It's
no bugs?
So cool. No bugs.
Oh, and there's no bugs.
You guys can ask like Olaf about it when we went. Because like it was straight up like we were barefoot. Like shirtless, just like two like Tarzan little kids just like running through the forest.
And you have the hair now.
Doing dumb stuff. Yeah, like running around and you'd like leap off the rock and land in the sand and giggling. But anyways, like that's fun. I really like that. I would take somebody there. I wouldn't take them to a Colorado wilderness because it's harsh and deadly.
Yep.
Yeah, I was sorely disappointed when I came to Colorado. Either, I'm telling you, for parkour in the woods, for the most part, I was even better than...
You need greenery and lushness if you want to do parkour outside. You don't need shale bark and freaking...
It's just so... Everything these mountains is sharp correctly. Here.
They were just like, yeah, this is still rocky.
Rocky mountains. That's it. You fall on some rocks and rocks are going to cut you. It's very... Yeah, there's not even that desert sand. It's just like everything on the ground is razor sharp and wants to stab you.
Yep.
Like everything in Colorado wants to cut you.
Yeah. They're like, bleed him so that we can absorb the moisture from his blood.
Exactly. It's so that.
But anyways, I think that like a good coach will find the archetypal like parkour two walls, the handy Kong rails. And find a way to make them fun and engaging for a new person, right?
Okay, I think opposite of what I'm saying. You're saying...
Well, I just think, like, when if somebody were to go and search parkour videos, what they're probably consuming is a lot of that content of people doing it there, right? So if I then take them to nature, they're like, but wait, I want to do the stuff that's in the city, like I see on the videos. Maybe they watch nature stuff, in which case they could specify that, but... They're probably wanting to do the roof gaps and cat leaps and like the stuff that you see people doing in videos at their favorite spots, right? And so I think getting them there and showing them a very low level, low risk version of those things is a better way to engage them.
I think that would take higher skill because I think that the amount of whether that's going to work or not. It's a romance, you know, not a science to get someone interested in parkour. And I feel like at the center of that is curiosity, right? Like if I could, it's much easier, I feel like, for me to get you curious about what the human body can do in relationship to its environment when I have, like, you know, the elements of nature, which are generally more, I mean, sometimes you find places like that are just, you just want to explore, like, I don't know, I kind of imagine like some of the places I've been in older cities. Where exploring was like, you know, you could because there's just different walls, there's brick, there's different textures. I mean, Old Town can be a little bit like this, where there's like an older section of town. But yeah, I think curiosity is super important. So how would you bring curiosity into that, or is it even important if someone's like,
I think curiosity is already there if they've already approached you asking like, hey, will you show me some parkour, right? But I think a lot of it does matter, the context of that person and your personal parkour, like those contexts matter, right? Like, if you are somebody who does a lot of nature parkour, your friend probably expects that, right? Because they're looking at your Instagram or your feed and they're like, mm-hmm. oh, what Travis does is really cool. And then they're like, hey, man, I want to like do some parkour. And then you take them to the city and they're like, but wait, your entire Instagram's like all you doing cool stuff and like trees and like, you know, Tarzan, right? But like for somebody, for me, there's not a lot of like nature stuff on my Instagram feeds, right? So anybody that would approach me to learn parkour is probably expecting me to do my stuff with them, right?
I'm a little concerned because I don't think there is anything in my Instagram with me.
No, that was just an example, but right. you know.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking the same thing. It's hypocritical.
You're right. It's a romance, not a science. Mm-hmm. So you do have to look at like, okay, this person, what's their background? Are they, you know, looking for their first breakout like movement sport, meaning they just work a day job, they normally just do the 9 to 5 mm-hmm. and then work out, you know, at 24-hour fitness kind of thing, or are they coming from another sport and now they want to transition? Are they ex CrossFit and they want something that's more engaging,
or they're expecting like something like Ninja Warrior or OCR and then really yeah. stepping into a whole new world, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so then your introduction, I think, needs to be tailored to that. But I don't think you really need to, like, try and introduce curiosity to them because they've already got it.
Mm.
You do want to stoke it a little bit by meeting their expectations of what parkour is and kind of connecting the pieces.
So a good question is, like, what did you see that got you interested in parkour? Like, what? Because that's sometimes when new adults come in, hey, what got you into, what'd you watch that got you want to come in here and do this? And then... kids are really shy. They'll just be like, oh, I don't know, stuff.
Yeah. You're like, okay. I ask them all the time. Like,
right? They won't like, answer I'm that like, question.
Hey, so you watch like a bunch of parkour videos, right? Or have you seen it on YouTube? And they're like, I'm like, you watched hundreds of videos.
Yeah. I'm freaking lying. What do you guys think? Do you think that that's changed? Dude, because for us, that was the medium. Like, but it's not.
They have to. I just don't know where else kids would consume this content if it's not. I mean, like,
maybe most, guess their friends doing it at school or something.
Maybe, but like 8-year-olds aren't typically on like Instagram or hopefully TikTok. Not. Yeah, so they're not getting it from there. YouTube's a huge trending platform for ages 8 through 12. So
I mean, but there aren't a lot of parkour videos for youth. I mean, it's like.
Yeah, but they usually watch like Minecraft parkour, and then that's what gets them in. They watch like something that's kiddie version of parkour, and then it ties them and pulls them in, and they're like, "What's parkour?"
Right, and that's why they're
doing it in their own servers,
and that's why they won't say it because they're embarrassed to say that they heard about parkour from Minecraft parkour.
I do think there's a little bit of like
possible,
like parent shaming that happens with kids around like Minecraft and like playing these like online games, right, like that. And parkour, because they're like, wait a second, you're doing parkour in a digital world? You can actually just go do parkour. And you're like, okay, Dad, but you watch football. And those dudes, you can actually go play football too. So, like, don't shame your kids like that, right? Like, it's cool. I got into parkour by watching TV.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, yeah. And I think kids are like, oh, I don't want to admit that, like, I play video games.
Right.
And that's like actually how I got into this physical sport, right? Like somebody coming in and being like, hey, so why do you want to play football? And they're like, oh, I play Madden a lot. Right? They think that's embarrassing, but anybody who's truly in love with the sport is gonna be like, oh, that's awesome, right? I love that. For me, I love when parkour is in other mediums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
when it's authentic. They think like, Minecraft parkour is pretty authentic, actually.
I speculate with kids anyway that there's a lot of dialogue amongst them in their circles.
In their maybe servers.
In their little, yeah. In their servers. Right. And they're like,
you could totally do this in real life. No, you can't.
I'm going to do it.
I'm going to prove it to you.
That's like, I've ran into multiple kids who outside of here have been like, because we use bands for band challenges. They're like belts and martial arts or whatever. But I mean, like, there's a lot of them that we've changed them constantly. And to be honest, we're never really like done with the tail end of them. And I've met a couple kids now who have been like, oh yeah, I went there. I have all the bands. And I'd be like, this is impossible because we haven't finished that project. I'm like, no, I've got all of them. I've got 5. I'm like, no, there's almost like 3 or 4 people who've gotten the 5th one. It was never published. It's like a behind the scenes thing.
Yeah.
You just... this is cute that you're saying this, but now you really got me questioning how far you made it. But yeah, so I think that's funny. But I think that they talk, and I know a lot of kids are like, I talk to parents and they're like, oh my kid just talking about parkour, parkour, parkour. Somebody at school was doing it. And I think they maybe go out during recess or just like there's like a moment maybe I'm imagining outside where there's like five kids playing parkour. One kid's cool or does something. The other kid's like, mom, I need to do parkour. Right? And that kid might not even know. It's just like, yeah, I had to get that clout.
I wouldn't be surprised if the kids are doing it naturally. It's because I did this too. And like, I remember middle school, there was a competition to swing off of the rings and who could do the coolest trick. And it was like, I ended up winning because I did a backflip. But
it sounds like a really easy way to.
Oh, it was super hurt. Dangerous. I don't know how we got so far along this. It was like a month long journey and we all competed. And then that's we started to bring the ring up on top of the slide and then jump off the slide. And
when was this?
This was like, must have been fifth grade or something like that. So what is that? 11?
11.
So it's right around these kids' age. And and we were doing this, and it naturally, you know, turned it into other jumping off of stuff. But we didn't have a name for it. And so now these kids have a name for it. And it's just, yeah, again, it's so easy to say. People love saying it for whatever reason.
They do.
Like, the syllables just work together. And so I think it's just when, before, we didn't really have the word to define what we were all doing, but we were all doing it. We were all jumping off stuff. Everyone jumps off your couch. So now that they have the name, it's just easy
and to repeat back to your parents. As much as that does irk me sometimes, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Like it's PR. So I'll
take it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's hard when it's something that's so close to you that you perceive a particular way. But now I think what Justin was saying.
It oscillates, right? Like, at first, you're like, anybody saying anything about parkour, you're like, oh, yes, that's my thing. And then eventually, like, you start getting irritated because you're like, that's not actually parkour. Mm-hmm. And then you get, like, where I feel like I am now, which is a little bit like old man, where I'm just like, good parkour. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I just jumped up the curb. Good parkour. Right? And you're just like, whatever. Just, mm-hmm. Whatever. You're saying parkour. It's cool.
Yeah, I like that you associated that with being an old man.
Yeah, it's like, there's two different kinds of old men.
Yeah.
There's like the ones that
get off my yard parkouring.
Yeah. And then the other ones that are just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Kids are going to be kids.
Yeah. I learned that, like, I study Chinese, right? You guys know this, but the audience might not know. I study to speak Chinese. And one of the, more recently I've been studying internet slang for gaming in Chinese. And I'm like, okay, what's the slang for gaming in Chinese? And they have this, so if you're not going to play ranked, right, you're just going to play more casually, they're like, 佛系. They're like, 佛系, yeah. Like, let's do this, what would the translation be? Like, Buddhist style. Like, let's just keep it cool. Just like, chill. Yeah, just like, you know, like, let's just do this Buddhist style. That's not it. And I thought that was so funny that, like, because in the culture, like, the Buddhists are, like, super chill. Like, you just can't, like, the idea is you can't jar them, right, about stuff. And so when there's all this, like, if you're not going to play ranked, then you just play, you know, Buddhist style, right? You don't, not so serious. Like, no, it's no big deal.
Like that.
Just go with it. No problem. Not a big deal. Like, when people are playing together and it gets really contentious, like, oh, I dropped in, you didn't ball. Like, they were talking about how, like, if you're, like, really trolling, which I also learned the word for troll in Chinese as well. And so if you're like, somebody's like just arguing with you or getting on you about your performance, then you might be like, oh man, you know, let's just take this Buddhist style. It's not just like, don't be so serious about this right now.
Yeah, that's good. It's not me. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a Buddhist style all the way, dude. It's all the way. Just don't get mad at me when, you know, I just gotta go save your butt.
Right? Oh my gosh. Yeah, right. Justin's cross map.
Yeah, exactly.
Just waiting.
I just gotta try extra hard. If you're playing Buddhist style, then, you know.
Justin's like,
I gotta play two Buddhist styles.
Double the sweat.
Yeah.
It's exponential for Justin. Like, it's, yeah, for every teammate he has that's playing casual, he doubles his sweat. So he's got a team of four and three are playing casual. Justin's the sweatiest monster out there.
You got three little baby Buddhas, and then you have to, like, triple your
intensity. That's definitely Justin when he's playing with Jordan and I.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm the most Buddhist style player ever, right?
Not in video games. In life, Justin might be, for the most part, like, pretty Buddhist about things. He's just like,
Yeah.
It happens, you know? or zen about things. Yeah. But not in video games. Justin is never like that.
Yeah. High expectations.
Yeah.
For himself and others. And that's that. What about that? Like, you've got. Okay, so let's recap some of those opportunities, right? If you have some experience coaching, also I think it's risky to just tell people if you want to introduce people to parkour, you just take them out and try and teach them when you've never taught anybody anything before. Because there's just a whole slew of like things you need to be aware of, the spider senses you need to pick up for people who are operating a body that's not yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do think though that everybody's got to start. If your route is to eventually go to coaching or training, you got to start somewhere. So if you haven't or you don't have a lot of experience coaching newbies in parkour, just spend a lot of time being intentional about beforehand about what you want to do, right? Don't make it up on the spot. Like, spend some time and be like, okay, well, what's some really basic stuff? How would I introduce that? Where would I introduce that? What might they get hurt doing?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be fun? What's going to be engaging? What's going to be safe though? And think through those things and really plan it out before, if you're brand new to coaching, right? Mm-hmm. Like somebody who's coached a lot of parkour can be like, yeah, cool, come on over, I'll show you right now.
Yeah, I think play at your level, do at your level, like have them do, like find someone at your level with that too. If someone wants to do it, and I mean, go the other way too, you can get somebody who's like super athletic and then you are just struggling, right? And they may want to take more risks than you earlier on, and you learn more skills faster too. So, I think it's probably a good idea to defer to coach a lot of the times if someone is like that.
That's probably your better route.
I would be trying to plug the gym in this context, but I feel like, yeah. Like the number of times early on in my coaching scenario, I've either like sort of made somebody feel like less interested because there was too much or too little intensity. And then the number of times that people have kind of gotten like passively injured messing around and aren't continuing to do it, pretty high. Yeah. So it took a while to learn how to teach this stuff, in my opinion.
It does take a while for sure to teach it right. Like I think to break down the skills just requires an analytical mind, but to break down the skills and then translate them to somebody who doesn't speak the language
mm-hmm.
of parkour, that's where coaching is you really show your stuff, right? And the only way that you learn how to speak language is by speaking the language. So if mm-hmm. you've never spoken it before, it's kind of hard to get your message across. I agree with you on that mm-hmm. one. But I think that also you need to look at like, what's their reason for wanting to check out parkour? Some people may be interested in it because they want to do cool stuff just themselves, right? They think it's cool. They want something physically engaging that's both mentally engaging and like physically enjoyable. But a lot of the times people also are always seeking for, I would argue that people are almost always seeking for some sort of community, right?
Mm-hmm.
So taking them to a class and the both of you joining a program, even for a little while, absolutely is maybe what they're looking for. They're just looking for a way to connect with you and what you do in a community that's broader, right? So joining like a parkour class with somebody and taking a couple of months of classes is a really cool experience for somebody. And I think that if I were going to get into something, like I was like, hey man, this guy's really good at tennis. Like, I'm going to ask him, hey, can you introduce me to tennis? Like show me some things on tennis. And he's like, yeah, totally. Like there's a program that starts. It's like, 4 weeks long or something like that. Right. And he joins it with me. I'd be like, oh, that's cool. I expected that we just go to the park and smack the ball around a little bit, right? But he's like, no, like here's a genuine introduction and I'll join with you. That way you know somebody in there and we'll have fun. I'll always be on your team. I'll be your partner if we play doubles, right? Mm-hmm. Like that would go a long way to me with somebody and would definitely increase my retention in that sport.
I think how do we avoid the, or should it be avoided? I think it should be avoided, but I'm going to ask the question openly. If you've ever met someone who did CrossFit, they're very passionate about you also doing CrossFit.
Yes.
So how should we have that in parkour? What does advocacy look like? And if you have this feeling that because you get a lot of joy out of training parkour, should you be, actively recruiting?
Basically. Should you be evangelizing?
Yeah.
I don't really think, I only really think that you should evangelize for parkour if it's naturally showing up in the activities that someone else is already doing. So it makes sense for me when I'm someone who's hiking and they want to get on top of a rock to take a picture, or there's already an overlap between what, you know, they've been doing and parkour can help them enjoy that in a new way. I feel like that makes sense. It's like, you know, if you do want to take this, you know, your hiking and your pictures, because I think exploring and finding or looking at places that you are frequenting, but from a new perspective, parkour helps out a lot with that, mm-hmm. particularly in the city, like looking at, you know, the stuff that you walk by every day with a new, you know, perspective is pretty cool. Maybe that's when I would do it. I can see that a lot of it is with mountains and hiking, but also like people who like, you know, if you're going like cliff jumping or something like that, that's an obvious one if you're into that type of stuff. CrossFit, maybe. Maybe there's like a, people want to learn flyways. Do people want to learn flyways in CrossFit?
No. People just want to learn how to like not blot their that's ACL or Achilles on box jumps or shin themselves.
That's something that I did. Those like, hardcore CrossFitters, they really just want to do parkour and then lift on the outside.
Really?
Because like, they're always wanting to learn like backflips and like wall runs and
that's
stuff
like
that.
That's when I think it's okay. It's like certain gymnasts will do that too. They'll come in here, they'll crush it. And I think it's okay to like kind of encourage them to try it, but I feel like most people kind of already got their stuff figured out. If they're doing other things, they know what they want to do. So
you hope.
Yeah, I think it's a moment of inspiration where they see something that looks something like something they believe they can do, and sometimes it's a benefit because it's you know, something that is obviously within their range. But I'm also really impressed by the number of people who are looking at people doing really crazy stuff and then coming in and saying, I want to do this. And then you see that a massive skills gap. I'm like, wow, you have a lot of courage because you saw that. You just watched that video and now you're like, I got to get into this. And I see some of that too.
You're audacious.
Yeah, you're quite audacious. And that's pretty cool. What's the, like, let's say technique. Let's say you don't have that. Well, there's online resources too. Like you could, you know, if you aren't around a gym, you can look at some, you can look at the online resources. But so you have to show them something. Like day one, you do get some low level obstacles or whatnot, and you're going out and you're going to introduce your friend to an environment of your selection, whether that be the traditional two concrete walls or that be the hopefully around like a natural area that isn't out to cut you every 5 seconds, like most of Colorado.
Yep.
So what's the first thing you're going to show somebody?
For me?
Yeah, you get one technique, you pick a skill, or maybe don't pick a skill. Maybe you're just going to like,
dude, I'd almost start with handstands on grass.
Handstands? Okay. All right.
Interesting.
I think it's something that like almost everyone wants to do handstand. I very rarely found people who don't like handstands. Mm. Like, nah, I'm not doing that. It's dumb.
Mm.
And it's something that I think is a pretty easy progression for. Everyone understands it. It's always impressive. And it just waterfalls into a bunch of other stuff.
Mm. Mm.
Parkour is so tough. I don't know where, like if I didn't have the gym, I was just outside, like I guess curb precisions, but it just seems so boring to me. It's mm-hmm. not something that you can like immediately show off and be like, this is what I learned today, right?
So I think that
there's something about that handstands that like people just do it at a beach and then it turns into cartwheels, right? And so, and you can't have a beach without cartwheels.
You're
just
saying
not
it's
possible.
A gateway skill.
Yeah.
So it's a gateway. It's like gateway drug. Yeah. You're like, once you do handstands and you want to do other cool stuff.
Yeah. I think beach and parkour make a lot of sense to me.
Mm. Even though they're incredibly difficult to do parkour on the beach.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, but say handstand. I like that. That's an easy one to lure people out of other like things like CrossFit because they've already kind of done some handstands.
Yeah.
And then that's very understandable for them. I just haven't met many people who are newer who can safely get upside down.
Can safely do it, right?
Yeah.
That's why the beach, that's why you add the beach.
Layer of safety. So you need the beach.
Yeah.
Wow, this is
a grass, great. Yeah.
Yeah. You're in like an environment. So let's say you go to your handstand, then you think, okay, they're going to be curious about handstands.
And that's I don't think I would have any intention
here, Justin.
I don't think I have intention with it. It's just that if I'm gonna, like, you're asking me like how I'm going to bring someone into parkour and they're gonna be an athlete who's doing Conda Cats, right?
No, well,
eventually, or not that specific skill, but they're doing parkour skill combos.
Eventually, right?
That's hard for me. I would never say I would ever start there. I'd always start with, can you have fun at the beach doing handstands? And then if you like that, then we can go further. But if that's your litmus test for curiosity. Yeah, I would guess that would. Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
There does have to be a bit of on the first session, or in the first couple of sessions. There needs to be a few show and tells, not from the coach, but from the students. They need to be able to take something that's very easy, learn it, and then think it's cool enough to be able to show it elsewhere. Right. So they need to be like, handstands are great because they're really low risk in reality. They're low risk if they're taught properly. And you can do them anywhere. Mm-hmm. And somebody would be like, this is cool. Check out this thing that I learned. And that just like that cycle just rewards, right? They learn, they show, they get all that like good feedback. People are like, that's cool. I didn't know you could do that. Reward, they learn a new skill, on and on. Because yeah, parkour at some point can get super high level where it just takes so long to learn something new.
I also think that what you need to learn, the obstacles that you need to learn on for parkour are very specific.
Yes.
Like just for vaults, it can be so difficult just finding the perfect wall to learn on. And then it's even harder to find walls that like push you on progressions. Like everything is so particular for parkour.
It can be, yeah.
But handstands, you just need grass or a beach.
It's somewhere flat and soft.
Yeah.
It's true. I like that one. I like it. It's also like, I mean, I think we've kind of on the show and tell, maybe a better term for it, but is also the reason that we don't enjoy starting our classes, or when I teach like beginner workshops. The reason I asked this question to you guys as the topic is because I recently had another group of high school students, right? Like every semester I get like 5 or 6 groups of high school students to do the adventure PE workshops, right? And they're almost always brand new to parkour. And I very rarely get like kids who are doing another semester of adventure PE. So they're almost always brand new. They're usually very athletic kids. And I'm like, how do I get them in here, have fun, and introduce them to parkour in a way that's like engaging? And so that's the question. I was like, well, how would these guys
do? Then we have a demographic to look at a little closer too. Because I kind of feel like, man, it's someone coming in like, hey, my kid should do parkour. And then someone else is coming up and I'm, 45 and I've been doing CrossFit.
Oh, yeah. And
my handstands suck, So let's say this demographic is what? Teenage boys and girls?
Yeah. Boys and girls, the age is probably 16 to 18.
16 to 8. Okay.
Yeah. And so
they're the easiest.
So they're the easiest and they're the most fun for me to teach these like one-off workshops.
What do you enjoy about it? Like, why is that the most fun?
They tend to be so engaged with like everything that's happening because I think at that age they tend to be like open to new things, but for the most part they're confident about like who they are and their athletic like abilities, and so I always introduce them. I usually do some sort of like acrobatic skill. It's almost always a front flip because I can teach a 16-year-old to do a front flip in like 15 minutes, right? So I teach that skill. It's also super low risk the way that we teach it. So I do that. And then I always do like a completion course in the gym.
Yeah.
I don't teach them like vaults and rolls and this other boring stuff. The same reason that I don't ever want to teach a workshop, even though we know that like rolls and vaults are very fundamental to parkour. They're so boring to learn. They're so boring to learn. They're so boring to teach. And nobody ever gets the roll right. And it just hurts them. And it's like, I understand how fundamental it is, but I don't want to introduce that to you because I want you to be like, that was so much fun, right?
There has to be a hook.
A hook, and a roll is not a hook.
And you have to be so close to be able to grab the skill and redo it that you feel like you have to do it, right? You have to try it again.
And the front flip is exactly like that. When you teach them the proper mechanics of a front flip for that age group, I wouldn't suggest it for like younger kids, right? Because they take a lot longer. But for this age group, I can get them to 90% of a front tuck in 5 to 10 minutes, right, with a progression. And then all I got to do is set up a safe area for them to attempt it and sit back and they'll go for 15 minutes just trying the front flip. In fact, I'll have to throttle them. I'm like, take a break, right? Because they'll just be like, I'm so close. I'm so close. Yeah. I'm so close. I'm so close. And they'll try and try and try and try and try. And that's what you want. And a handstand is very much like that, right? Mm. You will see people who like will kick up to a handstand and they'll be like,
yeah. And the thing that's funny about handstands is like, it's one of those few things where you really feel like you're doing it. But if you took a picture, it would be just a hot mess. So experientially, you're like, it isn't a like, did I do it? It's like you feel upside down and then you're still upside down. You're like, oh man, I've got to look like, you know, a perfect gymnast right now. I'm Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
The front flip's the same way, right? Like people will huck that thing and they'll barely land on their feet and they'll be like, ah. And you'd be like, you look like somebody just chucked you out of an airplane. Yeah. Right? Very true. But again, experientially, they're like, I just did front flip.
Yeah.
Or I just did a handstand.
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely onto something, or at least you put words to something that we were already kind of doing. So
yeah, absolutely. I guess, yeah. And with that age, I think that too. I just think of my, some of my friends or new students that have come in who are a little bit older and even in their 20s and have just tried to do handstand and just fall on their neck.
Yeah,
For the adults, because you're just so far away from playing, right?
I think
the part. It's like when if you get past, you know, mid 20s and you haven't been doing any.
Gosh, it just feels so young to me, like mid 20s. You're like, okay, it was just a few years ago you were in that 16 to whatever range. 16 to 18 range. Yeah. But at that age, you're like, it's where your head to body weight ratio is just like this perfect equilibrium. I think that's really what it is. I'm using head to body weight ratio.
Head to body weight.
So when this is my perfect medium. Right. So kids, they're like why can't you do the front flip thing? They need more progressions.
You're talking about because when your head is bigger, you're more used to playing?
I think it goes both directions. So what I'm saying is like when you're a little kid, you have this really big head relative to your body. It just like falls over your neck is just a risk or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then between like 16 and 18, it's like perfect equilibrium. Okay. And then it goes the other direction.
Yeah.
Your head gets smaller and your body gets bigger.
Yes.
So there's like this perfect equilibrium of like deflation and inflation of head to body weight ratio. And you get on either end of those.
Yeah.
And you're running into trouble. You have to make accommodations. Like ankle issues with kids, not so much. Head, And you go the other direction, right? Head issues with adults, not so much. Relative to the body, the head's smaller. Ankle issues, now down low is getting, filling out, right? And there's more weight on the ankles and wrists and elbows and shoulders, and it's tugging and it's pulling and it's pushing, and they're not used to it. So my knees, my ankles, my shoulders, right? My wrists, that's what you hear. But with kids, you maybe hear some of that stuff with the overuse impact stuff, but usually you look at them and they're like, flip, 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 right? They've got that like whippy ragdolly thing, and you're like, that's going to get you, not the, not the weight. So that's what makes me think about that.
Yeah, it is. It changes quite a bit with adults.
So sure. Would we say that the introductory lesson for somebody who's checking out parkour, the skill focus changes based on the age? Obviously.
Absolutely.
We're talking about context. Other contexts being like their athletic background, obviously going in factor, but as just a broad range for age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What would you guys say for like, the micro nuggets?
Yeah. So I think
toddlers and like early elementary, you don't need to introduce parkour to them. They do parkour already. You just need to like hang out with them. But then middle school, like late elementary and then middle school, what skill would you guys do?
So I think that the skills for that, almost what we would do for youth level one programming, where I really think it should be at, and what you would do for adults. So
are mirrored?
Yeah, I think they're actually mirrored. And especially as challenges go. If challenges are the emphasis, I think that's a great introduction, whether you're outside or inside or whatever. Coming up with a ability-appropriate challenge as an introduction, that's just like a little mini course or something like that, right? A little obstacle course challenge, or even just individual skills that aren't, they're kind of like not super high risk. But for your ankle sprains, I feel like that's with adults in particular, and with the younger ones, kids just falling off stuff, that kind of balances out. That's why you need a wider surface area, right? Reduce ankle sprain for adults and keep kid from just falling off, right? I think for that age group, you've got that weird, like,
you know, continuum where they meet there, even though they're at completely different ages. The one in the middle that you're talking about, I think it's the courses. I think you're right. I think if you just don't know what you're doing and you're just trying to have some fun, pick low challenge courses. I wouldn't go for the front flip because you don't know how to teach the front flip.
Yeah.
But if you're just like, just do some, you know, we're just gonna go outside, we're gonna mess around on this tree, or we're gonna go to this neighborhood and we're just gonna try some challenges. And as long as you look out for ankle sprains, I just think ankle sprains are the big one. Like somebody hop into a, you know, little pavement, you know, curb, like Justin was talking about. I think ankle sprain, got to make sure that it's maybe more of one of those like balancey challenges where like you're trying to like hold on the side of a building and shimmy around like a low part of it or something like that.
Yeah, that's like some bouldering challenges or shimmying challenges, I think, are a really great one.
Don't jump at stuff. I mean, I just think that's, unless you really
power
know
stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's where the injury's happening, right? But a bouldering challenge for like for adults could be fun if it's low level, like to the ground, and it's engaging. I think the same for like your 8 to 12 year old demographic is a good one too. So, yeah.
I think that's good advice.
That's a lot of skills though.
Yeah. Yeah. At that young age, lava is a skill.
Lava is. Lava, and it's engaging, right? They're so visually like I picture the lava. It's real.
Lava's real. Yeah, like Nova, when she was younger, had a big fear of lava too. She's like, oh, I'm afraid of lava. I'm like, you've never seen lava. How are you afraid of it?
Dude, there's like a 50-50 chance that like if Nova was in here and I was like, Nova, the floor's lava, she'd be like, wow. Or she'd be like, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
Yep. It's a 50-50. That she's either all in or all out.
Yep. As soon as she gets closer to teenagers, she's going to be like, that's dumb.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. And Nova's going to hear a lot of shit from us. She's going to be great.
Exactly.
Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you are watching us, you can listen to us on any of your major podcast platforms. If you're listening to us, check us out on YouTube. Follow us there. We also post other content on the off week. So like next week's actually going to be a visual content, so we'll be on the floor like drilling some skills. So definitely check in on the YouTube for that. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Peace.